Good morning, everyone. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, January 21st, 2022. The time is 9:06 a.m. We're meeting in the State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Begich, Senator Hughes, and myself, Chair Senator Holland. We're expecting Senator Machicki and Senator Stevens to show up shortly. We are going to go ahead and get rolling because we do have a little bit of pressure on us. It's a 10 o'clock House floor session and 10:30 Senate floor session that we have to be mindful of schedule-wise. Thank you to Mary Gwen and Carrie, our recording secretaries, and Alex, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. Today we will hear two House bills. This is the first hearing in the Senate for each of these bills. My intent today is just to get an overview, and then return next week for public testimony and amendments. First up will be House Bill 53. I'll now bring House Bill 53 before the committee. Representative McCarty, if you'd like to come take a seat. House Bill 53 is a bill relating to military children's school residency waivers. Representative McCarty, as the bill sponsor, would you please provide us with an overview of your bill?
Mr. Chair, this is Representative Ken McCarty from District 13 at Eagle River, Chugiak, and Jaybear. And so I'm here to present 53. So the sponsor statement is...
Brief at ease. Thank you. We're back on the record. Representative McCarty, a small technical solution there. If you care to resume, we'll see if we manage to fix it.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. This is Representative McCarty. Comes out well?
Sound good to you?
All right. I can hear myself well.
As a bill sponsor, please provide us with an overview of your bill.
All right. So in the sponsor statement here is that the intent of the bill is when a family is PCSing to Alaska, that their children are to get enrolled into school, and some of these children may have some classes that they need to be in those classes right away, maybe to graduate, maybe for certain issues. And so while they're out of the state, that allows them to enroll into the school, to sign up for those classes before they arrive here because they know that they're coming to Alaska. So it's a kind gesture to our military families, so that reduces that stress of what happens in school.
Thank you. If you would care to provide a brief sectional analysis for your bill while I have you here.
Okay, thank you very much. So, Mr. Chair, the section one is making the statement of what I just referred to, of being able to come in with their guardian. And in section one, it talks about what is the definition of a guardian that's fitting of state statute currently, and also what is a military installation, which is fitting of coming to Alaska. In section two is an effective date to that, making it effective immediately upon passing.
Thanks so much. And just for anybody listening in PCS, I'd make you put a quarter in the acronym jar because not everybody knows, I believe, permanent change of station. But just for the record, PCS is permanent change of station, a family moving under orders. I see you have, welcome to Senator Stevens. I had just mentioned earlier that we went ahead and got rolling because we do have some pressure with a 10 o'clock House floor session and a 10:30 Senate floor session. So I see that you have Ms. Tammy Peralt on the line as invited testimony. Ms. Peralt, if I'm pronouncing your name, please state your name, affiliation. There's a new thing for people who are phoning in or Zooming in. We also ask you to mention your location for the record and begin your testimony.
Senator Senator Holland and members of the committee. My name is Tammy Perot. I am with the Department of Defense, Defense State Liaison Office, and I'm coming to you today from Joint Base Lewis McChord in Washington State. This legislation, House Bill 53, will allow the state of Alaska to join 32 other states in providing early advanced enrollment to students who are coming into the state. This policy is supported by the Department of Defense for our K-12 children. Approximately 185,000 U.S. military children move between schools annually. And as was mentioned, these children often do this over the summertime during the PCS, permit change of station, season. As a result of these moves, they may potentially miss school registration timelines and other important application dates that occur in the spring. And this can have a long-term negative impact on those having to shift their planned courses of study. It may require them to take courses in summer school or even force them to graduate later than their peers. With nearly 10,000 active duty military school-aged children attending school in the state of Alaska, Alaska is in a unique situation to have a positive effect on the educational experience of military children and families. The intent of this policy is not to offer an advantage or priority over other students, but simply to provide military families access to educational programs and courses at the same time as their peers. No new online systems are required, and there is an added benefit to school districts by reducing the discrepancy between projected and actual student enrollment numbers for staffing purposes. In closing, we are grateful to the tremendous effort that the state of Alaska has historically made to support our military members and children. We appreciate the opportunity to support the policy reflected in House Bill 53, and we are especially grateful to Representative McCarty for the introduction of this legislation. I stand for your questions.
Thank you, Ms. Perot. Are there any questions from the committee? And seeing Senator Begich.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for the bill sponsor. Is that appropriate at this time or not?
Please go ahead.
Representative McCarty, my question is just on line 6 of the bill. It says the school district shall consider a student to be a resident of the district, et cetera, et cetera. Does this impact any other program like permanent fund dividend for residency purposes? Would this bill affect those? And if so, I support the bill. I just want to know what the impact may be. Have you checked that with the Department of Administration or Revenue?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that has no impact upon that. They still have to come into the state to do that piece for the permanent fund dividend. It just gives them acknowledgement by the district that they could enroll into the classes.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Stevens?
Just to follow up on that, Representative, I think that's a very important question. And residency, I'm not sure what the rules are of the permanent fund, and you might wind up, I really support the idea. As a former military person, I think it's a great idea. But would you check into that with the permanent fund dividend folks and make sure that there that letting a child into school, considering them a student, a resident early, I think that's a very important question. That could have an impact on being able to apply for permanent fund dividend down the road, maybe a year later. So we need to cross that T if you don't mind.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I will do that, and I will get back to the chair to disseminate that information.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McCarty, for bringing this bill forward. I think it's a good bill, and I just have a question. It's probably pretty rare, but could we ever double count a student if we had a student still in school, let's say in Eielson, and the parent knows that they're going to be moved to Elmendorf, and now we're going to enroll them in Anchorage School District? Is there a concern with that ever happening?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I know that the discussion about coming out of state into the state, that was, helping for those that are in the state moving to another base in the state. It would be likened to someone living in a school district in like North Pole and coming to Anchorage. I could verify that in a piece for you.
One follow up. I think the chances of it are pretty rare, but I don't think we should double count a student. So I don't know if there's if there would need to do anything to fix that. But if you could please check into it, please.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Senator Hughes. With no other questions, we are pressed a little bit for time today. If members have any amendments for this bill, please submit them to my office by Tuesday, January 25th at noon. Should any of these questions arise and we need to push that timeline back to get resolution on some of the stuff, then that'll be fine. At this time, I will set House Bill 53 aside. And as I mentioned, there's a amendment deadline Tuesday, January 25th at noon. Thank you, Representative McCarty. Thank you, Ms. Perot. Representative McCarty, you have any final thoughts or comments?
Just the comment to the chair, the comment of there's no fiscal note to this. So it's nice as we're looking at budget that this is not going to have an impact upon our budget.
Thank you again, Representative McCarty.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to set House Bill 53 aside. Next on the agenda is House Bill 19, which I will now bring before the committee for consideration. House Bill 19 is related to limited teacher certificates. For the committee's benefit, we have Sandra Meredith on the line from the Department of Education to answer any questions that may come up. Representative Christ Tompkins, welcome to the committee. As a bill sponsor, would you like to provide us with an overview of your bill and the sectional analysis?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for having us. I'm the sponsor of House Bill 19. It's a bill that creates a limited teacher certificate, specifically focusing on immersion language education. This is the third straight legislature I've carried this legislation or variation of this legislation. It two legislatures ago passed the House, I think unanimously or near unanimously, but didn't quite get across the finish line and your all's respective body. Last legislature, it met an untimely demise owing to COVID, but I think also passed the House of Memory Serves. And this legislature, it passed the House, I'm proud to say, unanimously. 38-0, I think, was the count. And now is before you all, and I'm very excited and motivated to see if we can get it done. The bill has broad support across the education community in Alaska, including the Department of Education, AASB, all the other major stakeholders and many individual school districts. And what it does is create a certificate for immersion language education, which, as some on the committee may know, is sort of in a emerging and increasingly sort of popular type of education for basically developing fluency in another language. And that can both include world languages, as we see with the Fronteras Charter School and the Mat-Su or Anchorage School Districts. Numerous immersion language programs from Japanese to German to now Yupik, but also to the point of Yupik, also for native languages as well. And so it's really relevant on sort of both sides of the equation. And I believe Brandon Locke from Anchorage School District will be testifying from sort of a in the trenches perspective. But effectively, many of the school districts that are developing these immersion language programs in these various languages are struggling with the inflexible parameters around teacher certification, where they have fully fluent teachers speakers in a language who they basically want to get into the classroom to help support their immersion language program. And the limited teacher certificate proposal is a way to provide a little bit more flexibility with adequate safeguards and checks. And I can sort of speak to that a little bit more. So the way this would work is that if there's a teacher who is fluent in a language that a school district has an immersion language program in, that school district would have to affirmatively request to the Department of Education, the State Board of Education, they want to get a limited teacher certificate for that teacher. Would require a school board level vote or authorization to sort of proceed with that request. Then the State Board of Education or the Department of Education would have to review and approve that request. So there's sort of a multi-layered approach and review for any would-be immersion language education teacher who would seek a limited teacher certificate. And I would defer a little bit more to Brandon to sort of describe some of the scenarios that districts that have been operating immersion language programs have encountered. Jennifer Schmidt-Hutchins, who's not available today, has also offered a lot of testimony in past hearings as to some of the difficulties and challenges in running an immersion language program. But this is a piece of legislation that was crafted basically to provide a solution to the problem that those practitioners have been encountering in districts. Just a couple more comments. The first is that immersion language programs are growing in popularity. They're quite popular in Anchorage and the MATSU, and ASD continues to add new languages, and it's just really remarkable that you've got, you know, kids fully fluent in Japanese at, you know, seventh grade, and the data, sort of broadly speaking, in terms of academic performance, is just, you know, you get fluency in another language, just broadly speaking, really impressive academic outcomes through immersion language programs. And so I think it's just sort of worth noting that overall trend that's really exciting. I'll just sort of briefly go into the sectional, although it's a little bit of a misnomer since the legislation really just has one section, but the section is everything. So section one in the bill, the CS for House Bill 19, title change on the first couple of lines starting line seven, line five or line seven on, gives the department the elective authority to issue a limited teacher certificate. So again, it's department discretion. It's a may and not a shall. Section B of section one, this sort of sets some of the criteria for someone who may qualify to apply for, or for a district to apply on the behalf, on behalf of someone who has, minimum requisite instructional skills and subject matter expertise to assure the public the person is competent as a teacher. So that's all operative language. I think it's worth noting that the State Board of Education is given the regulation making authority to sort of further spell out or create more sideboards or parameters for how they would want to sort of administer and govern this certificate. So I think that's really important from our perspective to give the agency that discretion and authority as opposed to attempting to write it into statute. That's maybe a little bit too sort of fine-grained for maybe us as the legislative branch. Section C, the department may issue a limited language immersion teacher certificate. This basically talks about how the school board has to sort of be an assenting party to the certificate. So again, there has to be local support. The school board and the superintendent have to feel confident about the teacher, the person in question, being the recipient of this certificate. So I think that's a really important sort of aspect of this process from our perspective. And I think it also sort of, creates a sense of sort of ownership and accountability and responsibility to, you know, the local school board and superintendent. You know, they have to sort of have skin in the game and be, you know, confident, sort of vouch for someone that they feel like they're an important person to have in the classroom to support the immersion language program in question. Subsection D is the authorization for promulgating regulations. And subsection C is the sort of length of validity for the immersion teacher certificate. And it's initially valid for 1 year, and then there's a renewal process. Again, that's sort of left to regulation for the agency to sort of figure out exactly how the Department of Education may want to sort of administer such certificates going forward. So that's the bill in a nutshell. Maybe too much monologuing there, but I hope that was a helpful overview to the committee.
Thank you, Representative Christ Tompkins. Senator Vegas, did you have a question?
Yes, I have a couple, if that's all right, Mr. Chairman.
Please go ahead.
Representative, there, you know, in the past I've had some questions about the bill, and you've done some work to adjust to those questions, it appears. And one of those was the section B, where you have now put in the language that demonstrates as required by regulations adopted by the Board of Instructional Skills. And my primary concern when this bill was first brought before this committee a couple years ago was the question as to whether or not we're effectively dumbing down the ability of a student to get a quality education from a quality teacher. And could you just describe to me how that line would, or perhaps this is a Department of Education request from the deputy, but how line 13, 14, and then on to page 215, how we show that a person is competent to have the skills for teaching. I went through teacher education training, and it, you know, it was 2 years of acquired coursework at a minimum outside of basic subject matter. So I'm just curious first about that, how we measure competency so that we are sure that the kids are being instructed in a quality manner. I love seeing it in here, but I want to know what we do to make sure that happens.
Thank you, Senator Begich, through the chair. Important question. Very much defer to the agency and sort of, you know, trust the agency's instinct on this. I think it would be helpful to hear from Ms. Meredith and you know, Mr. Locke, for that matter. I would sort of just add, maybe before deferring to them, that in terms of this language, it was really helpful for me, I think, to hear sort of the real world examples that different districts and emerging language programs have encountered. If I'm sort of recalling correctly, this is all from, you know, last session, so memory is a little bit fuzzy, but there's situations where you have, you know, fully certificated teachers from another country. I want to say like Colombia was the situation with Fronteras and Wasilla, and you know, like the district, the principal, the superintendent all had sort of exceeding confidence in the person's instructional ability and ability as a teacher, but for a variety of reasons that, you know, doesn't jump through all the certification hoops in Alaska. And forgive me if I'm getting the details wrong, but I think this is directionally right. And so, you know, that was a sort of scenario or case study that I think was cited previously as, you know, the kind of person who might be taking advantage of what a limited teacher certificate would offer. But given that the agency would be interpreting this, I might defer to Ms. Meredith for additional comments.
Mr. Chairman, before we get the answer from Deed, maybe I should put the other two questions because they could probably answer those at the same time. They're very short questions, the other two.
Okay, if you want to mention them. We also have invited testimony on this as well from Brandon Locke?
You see, he's with Deed, yes.
He's Director of World Languages and Immersion Programs, Anchorage School District.
Okay, so the other two questions were just, one, does this require the teacher certified with this 1-year certificate to be a mandatory reporter, which is one of the requirements that we do have for teachers? And then the second one was, would they be required to join the professional organization if the school district is represented by a professional organization, say the Alaska Education Association or Federation of Teachers or whatever? Those were the other two questions. I don't have any other questions.
Well, we'll keep those questions in the background. I would like to move on to invited testimony. And Senator Stevens?
I think another issue we need to get on the floor here. I mean, this bill has been around, and we've heard in the past some opposition from Deeds. I hope we find out what the changes were made to take care of that. But I'm concerned about the what a limited certificate means, and I think we need to know more about that in time. You know, I know many teachers have spent many years becoming certificated teachers. It's not an easy process. I want to make sure this is not a backdoor way for someone to become a fully fledged accredited teacher. And I think limited is what the key is. So I need to understand that fully, that someone could be hired in a language, but not make them a fully accredited teacher in other areas.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Senator Hughes.
Yes, and kind of along these same lines, we are the education committee, and we want to make sure as our students are going through and graduating, they are receiving excellent education. So it would be helpful to me to know, so we have a teacher that is fluent in a language, but they may not have had all the training for teaching math or science or such. Do we have data that shows that they are still performing very well in those kind of more difficult subject areas that often teachers will spend years studying and learning how to teach? And as part of that data, I'm wondering, in the immersion programs, are they typically in grade school, middle school, and are we seeing them also in high school? I guess I'd be particularly concerned at the high school level if someone didn't have all the training for some of these more difficult topic areas. So can you kind of let us know where we're what grades we're seeing and the data on the other subject? And then I have one other question after that.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, really appreciate the questions, and I'll sort of try to sort of work through them, do my best, maybe in reverse order. On data, there is strong data on outcomes, and I'll let Mr. Locke speak to that when it comes for time for him to testify. In terms of the sort of age range that we're talking about, and especially like the special, like we're talking about like, you know, calculus and, you know, AP physics being, you know, taught in Japanese. And it's a really important question, and, you know, for the committee's sort of reference, and Mr. Locke can speak to this more, of course, given that he actually runs actual immersion language programs. It's generally all basically from the youngest ages, and there's a sort of slow diminution of the extent to which students are taught in the immersion language or target language running through elementary school, and basically, and he could correct me on this, but like phasing out generally towards the start of middle school. And by that point, the students have basically acquired fluency in the language. And there's maybe some maintenance of like a Japanese literature course or whatever, you know, at grade 8 or grade 10 or whatever. But when we're talking about immersion language programs, generally speaking, and Mr. Locke can correct me if I'm making an inadvertent misstatement, we're talking about, you know, K through 4, K through maybe 6. So in terms of, you know, very specific, you know, subject matter content like physics or chemistry or whatever, generally different age range that we're talking about. To your question, Senator Stevens, about the sort of limited nature of the certificate, a big part of the limitation is, the length of the certificate is 1 year. The terms of the certificate would be set by the State Board of Education. So there's all these sort of sideboards and limitations, some of which are set forth in statute, and additional limitations to be determined by the agency. I think that may in part be account for the support of the agency for this now, although I would have to, you know, defer to Commissioner Johnson to speak for himself on that point. We've certainly worked really closely with the agency over the last number of years, and Ms. Meredith may also perhaps be able to speak to that, although I think Commissioner Johnson would be the primary point of contact. And then to Senator Begich's two questions, for mandatory reporting, Ms. Meredith may have the authoritative answer. My guess, and it's really not much, it's an educated guess, would be that the answer is yes. But we could track that down and or work with the agency. And as far as professional organizations, I don't actually know. We have spoken with the NEA about this, but those conversations were a while ago. So we could get that tracked down. I think just one last thing I would add that maybe relates to one or both of those questions is that just in sort of giving context for the status quo, right now, a lot of immersion language programs, they are finding themselves in a position where they have to be incredibly entrepreneurial and pragmatic to be able to deliver the program that there is, you know, demand from parents and students for. And again, there's been past testimony from various principals and emerging language practitioners that you know, there's long-term substitutes that are sort of being wrangled in to be able to help deliver these programs because of the teacher shortage and the difficulties with certification and its inflexibility. Everybody would say that's not the ideal, that we have long-term, you know, substitutes like in the classroom for a year. But that's kind of what's happening for a variety of reasons. And so sort of recognizing that that's where it's what's happening. Part of the motivation of this is to sort of provide a better option and a better path that can sort of be an on-ramp for getting, you know, we all want just fully certificated teachers in the classroom, and you know, part of the idea here is that this is sort of a stepping stone for getting there. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I do want to move on to our invited testimony because more answers lead to more questions. And we will be revisiting this bill on Wednesday, January 26th, and have time for more answers. But Mr. Brandon Locke, I believe you're online. If you would please state your name, affiliation, as I mentioned, your location for the record, and begin your testimony.
Yes, sir. Thank you. My name is Brandon Locke. I am the Director of World Language and Immersion Programs for the Anchorage School District, and I am calling in from my office in Anchorage. I've been in my position for 9 years. Prior to this, I was a elementary school principal and also a high school and middle school French teacher. This is my 23rd year in public education. I've got a master's degree in curriculum and instruction with a focus on language immersion education, and I'm currently writing my dissertation for my doctorate in the same topic. I was taking very copious notes, and so I'm going to actually change what I had planned on saying to answer some of the questions that were just brought up. But to put things into perspective, language immersion programs are not new. They've been in existence since the 1960s, and they are all across the country. Anchorage has had immersion programs since the late 80s, starting in Japanese. We have the first Russian immersion program in the United States. And I'll just, on an aside, let you know that we have 3 high school seniors in the Russian immersion program that are currently also employed with the National Security Agency here at Elmendorf. And they are in a work-study program working with Russian linguists. The NSA sought them out because of their language abilities. And so they are fully employed by the NSA. That's just a new partnership that we have going with them, and it's an excellent one. So we have 8,000 students in Anchorage that are enrolled in either an immersion program or a more traditional language program, like at that middle or high school level, like a Spanish 1, Spanish 2, Spanish 3. 2,600 are enrolled in our immersion programs. We have 8 immersion programs in 7 languages. We have Japanese, 2 Spanish programs, Russian, German. All of those that I just mentioned are K through 12. And then we have 3 newer programs that are still growing, and we add a grade every year. Chinese will move to middle school next year. We also have UPIC, which was funded through a federal grant that Senator Murkowski was actually very instrumental in getting Congress to approve. And finally, French. And so to answer some of the questions that came up, I want to just reiterate what Representative Christ Tompkins had mentioned about this would really be a saving grace for emergency situations only. This is a bill that Superintendent Dr. Dina Bishop endorses, as well as the Anchorage School Board, and we don't take this lightly. We want to work through DEED, and we want to make sure that we are hiring the very best qualified people possible. Unfortunately, there's a huge teacher shortage in the country, and World Languages is not immune to that shortage. And we have a very, very hard time recruiting teachers to move to Alaska, and we do not have a qualified teaching pool to pull from. One of the questions that I believe Senator Begich brought up was related to quality of instruction. Right now, not necessarily today, but in general, we actually have to staff many of our positions with long-term subs. So they may not even have, you know, a degree in education at all. And so I'm not sure what would be worse, having somebody having to piecemeal a classroom with a variety of different people to fill the position, or hire somebody on a limited certificate with the support of the school, the mentor teacher, the principal, et cetera. The vast majority of our needs are at the elementary level. And to answer the question about the data, in our elementary programs, we do a 50-50 model. So half of the school day is taught in English by an English-speaking teacher, and they teach the English language arts, reading, writing, and math. The immersion teacher teaches the immersion language as well as the science and the social studies. And the reason that that is done is because the research has shown that learning language and content hand in hand is actually the best way of teaching a language, because it's a contextualized situation as opposed to teaching about the language. Our science scores on the on the state assessments have typically not been very strong in general in ASD. And so one of our school board members several years ago asked the same question about the data. So I pulled the data of our science scores, and I compared our immersion students to non-immersion students. Here's the interesting thing. The immersion students' scores in the science tests were considerably higher than those of the non-immersion students. And the interesting thing is that they received their science instruction in a language such as Japanese or Russian, but yet the assessment was taken in English. So that tells me two things. One, dedicated time to teaching science will improve science scores, but two, that the students are able to make the connections in real-world situations on the science content and understand it. The other reason that we do science and social studies is because those two areas also are very, very rich in vocabulary and topics that we as humans talk about on a daily basis. Climate change, for example, history, political issues, things like that, as opposed to the discrete vocabulary that is in something like math. I also wanted to mention that they have a partner teacher, but those partner teachers in English are very, very instrumental because they help support the new immersion teachers when they come over. And we go through a vetting process like everybody else. We interview, we check references. In many cases, we actually have hired somebody that has maybe worked in a different state. For example, Utah has a very, very large statewide immersion program, and we have a lot of teachers, I should say, Utah has a lot of teachers that come over on visas, and then those visas expire, and they have to move to a different place if they want to stay here. So that's the biggest challenge, is locating teachers that are eligible to work here. And so when we have to, and we do, we have about 9 teachers right now that we have on sponsored visas. And the problem is we can't apply for a visa with the federal government until they actually have a teaching certificate in hand. And that's impossible when you're living abroad and you have to take a praxis test, for example, and you can't access that from your home country. And so that is exactly where this type of a bill would come into play. And I want to also reiterate that I believe it's just a 1-year certificate. And so basically, you know, we would have that year as a sort of a training year for them, and we would see if we want to continue their employment. They would be fully employed with the school district, which would mean that they would automatically be a member of AEA or whatever the bargaining unit is for that district. And as fully employed teachers, they would have also the requirement of being a mandated reporter. One last thing that I wanted to mention was that looking over my notes to make sure that I'm not missing anything that was brought up. One of the things that many of our teachers are having to do because of current regulations is they enroll in a teacher education program while being a teacher, which is great, except for they're being sort of required to take classes that really don't benefit them. So, for example, many of the teachers are in the UAS Southeast program, which is very creative. It's online. It's relatively flexible. But they are, the teachers that are in the program have to take classes like how to teach elementary art or music methods for elementary teachers. Our Chinese teachers are hired to teach Chinese immersion. They are not teaching art. They're not teaching music, but they're having to take those classes in English and, you know, do all of those requirements while still teaching. And then they have to do a required student teaching, which is also in English, which is something that they don't teach. So it's just kind of a catch-22 in terms of what we put them through to fit what we think is needed when it's really not needed for what they're doing. And I believe I answered the questions that came up. And I think that's, yeah, bear with me for one second here. I'm just looking over my notes. I believe that is all I have to say.
Thank you, Director Locke. I am going to invite Sandra Meredith to state her name, her affiliation, and her location. And just her name was mentioned once or twice today. See if she has any input on any things she might have heard. Sandra Meredith, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you, Chairman. My name is Sandra Meredith. I am the administrator for teacher certification for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, and I'm currently located here in Juneau. There was quite a number of questions. I think Brandon has answered many of them. I did want to reflect back on the question, if that's okay, from Senator Baggage around how we would know if these individuals had the instructional skills needed. Right now, we currently offer limited certificates in the area of CTE, career technical education, ROTC, military science, and also for Alaska cultures and language. And similar to those applications, I would envision through regulations that there would be things like letters of recommendation for these individuals from the initial application, resumes, information around years of experience. After that first year, there would be potentially things like their evaluations from the district, maybe a portfolio. Those kind of things can help us determine the instructional skills of the individuals, and that there would be junctures along the way through which we could do the additional vetting beyond what the districts are already going to do through their hiring processes if individuals have the skills. I think that's all that I have to add to the conversation or the questions that were asked. And then I'm here available for additional questions.
I am being sensitive to the House floor session. Did you have something very brief?
Just really quickly, Mr. Chairman, Senator Baggage, just the mandatory reporter question. Could you just touch on that? Are they mandatory reporters?
Through the chair, Senator Baggage, yes, these individuals would be considered mandatory reporters and would be required to go through the mandatory training that all educators are required to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Baggage. Representative Christ Tompkins, I'll give you the last opportunity to have any comments before we wrap it up for today. I know you have to get on over to your floor session.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the additional information and testimony from Mr. Locke and Ms. Meredith, and fully at the disposal of the committee for any additional follow-up or anything else that would be helpful.
I will set House Bill 19 aside. At this time, we plan to revisit it on Wednesday, January 26th. Our next meeting is Monday, January 24th at 9 a.m. Is there any other business before the committee? And seeing none, we are adjourned at 9:50 a.m.